Welcome to the first episode of Vox Populi, the show by atheists, for atheists. This is a new feature where a group of intelligent and opinionated atheists make their voices heard. Twice a month, each participant answers up to four questions on various issues relevant to the atheist life. Our first question, perhaps the million-dollar question, why are you an atheist?
Well, the reason I'm an atheist is quite simple, really, and it's twofold. The first reason is exactly the same reason that you're an atheist. Now, maybe you believe in the Christian God of the Bible, or maybe you have some New Age belief in some spiritual God that's all around us or some weird thing. But consider other gods which people believe in that you don't. If you think about it, for just about all of the gods out there, of course, in principle, there's infinitely many of them, you're an atheist too. We're both atheists. I just have one or maybe a few less God beliefs than you. Secondly, I'm an atheist because, to cut to the chase, atheism is true. I don't have time to go into the details of many arguments in such a short answer, but I hope the question does come up in the future. But to put it simply, though, I'm an atheist for the exact same reason that I hold the sky to be blue. Okay? Both are true propositions, and I don't imagine it would be possible for me to force myself to think so irrationally as to claim that the sky is green or fluorescent pink or something. Well, unless there's a rainbow, I guess. But likewise, I can't imagine claiming anything less than the fact that no gods do exist. And among numbers too high to count, those are just two of the main reasons why I'm an atheist.
I am an atheist because Christianity fails. It's really as simple as that. I was brought up in a Christian home where biblical literacy was emphasized. Ultimately, that led to my apostasy. As I grew into adulthood, I began to learn to think for myself and to apply critical reason to virtually everything in my life, and eventually to my religion. Critical literary study of the Bible opened up one treasure trove after another, as I discovered mythological archetypes, literary inconsistencies, and evidence of rewriting and redaction. I had assumed when I began that the divine essence of Holy Scripture would make itself more evidently known to me with each passing day, but what I found instead were the heavy hands of men smudging the scriptures that I had once held sacred. As much as Christians trumpet their doctrine in all its myriad of variations, one simple fact underlies all denominations: the divine inspiration of the Bible. And no amount of theological wheedling or overzealous commentary can make up for the fact that, at its core, Christianity is based on a book of myths.
I am an atheist for two reasons. First, I find no reason to believe in a God. And second, I find every reason to not believe in any God, or for that matter, any supernatural phenomena. By extension, I find no reason to adhere to any religious dogma or philosophical stance based on or implying such beliefs. I do not believe in the existence of a God because I find no compelling logical reason to do so. On the other hand, I find a very compelling and logical reason to actively disbelieve, which is that the core idea or concept of an omnipotent being or of any supernatural being or force is by definition logically impossible. These concepts preclude existence by their very nature. This nature is one of complete incomprehensibility or unintelligibility, and there is no square one, you might say, from which to form a belief, or, needless to say, from which to derive consequent beliefs like the notion of a separate spiritual realm or an afterlife. These things sound good, but they cannot be.
Why are you an atheist? If we look at theism and what it is they want us to accept, we begin to run into trouble. Nothing is defined in religion. What's a god? What's a soul? It becomes quite clear that you can't rationally accept these empty sound blurbs as true, and that these blind beliefs cause nothing but trouble in the face of reality. Belief is also what I call taboo thinking. You need to think about the troubles facing you, even if they seem unpleasant. If you can't get past the denial phase of an apparent problem, it will never improve and you will always keep these unsatisfactory thoughts about certain aspects of your life. In my experience, breaking down taboos has caused me to accept and deal with life much more adequately.
Some questions seem mysterious or hard to answer when really they're just asked wrong. A perfect example is the question, "Why are you an atheist?" That's the wrong question to ask. Everyone starts out life as an atheist. To quote John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, "It does not appear that man has naturally any more idea of God than any beast of the field. He has no knowledge of God at all, no fear of God at all, neither is God in all his thoughts. Whatever change may afterwards be wrought, he is by nature a mere atheist." Try it for yourself. Ask any newborn what he or she believes about religion or gods, and he or she will just look at you and maybe spit up. So, if all humans are born atheists, without any gods in their lives, the correct question is, why is anyone not an atheist? The answer is simple and obvious. Humans acquire religion from their society. Isn't it more than a little suspicious that children in Christian societies tend to grow up Christian, children in Muslim societies tend to grow up Muslim, children in Hindu societies tend to grow up Hindu, etc.? Try another experiment for yourself. Shield a child from any exposure to Christianity and see if he or she spontaneously comes up with Jesus and heaven and revelations. They will not. So, if religion is learned, and therefore culturally specific, any Christian listening today would have been a Muslim if raised in a Muslim society. Think about that. The only remaining question is, why should you acquire a religion instead of retaining your inborn natural atheism? Every religion thinks that it's the true religion, but they can't all be. Each one negates the others. But even more so, reason and critical thinking show that all arguments for religion fail, and that the two main reasons why people have religion, acceptance of authority and supposed subjective religious experiences, are inherently untrustworthy. Then, if a person could reach mental maturity without acquiring religion, could learn reasoning before religion, then a person would never accept religion, because you would already have the critical thinking skills to recognize foolishness and fantasy when you see it. Training someone in religion depends on getting them before they can think critically. Wesley knew it and said so, which proves that religion is not the natural state of humans, but rather atheism is.
Our second question is, what should we teach children about Santa Claus? How is teaching about Santa Claus similar or different to teaching religion?
I suppose that teaching children about Santa Claus is fine, as long as you include in this teaching the fact that the jolly old man with a white beard, a red suit, and a flying sleigh is fiction. I mean, you can tell the story of how Santa and his magical reindeer, led by a fluorescent red-nosed Rudolph, fly across the world from the North Pole in a single night and omnisciently bestow upon only the good girls and boys the gifts they deserve, within the monetary limitations imposed on them by their parents' pocketbooks, of course. But if you do, you must either preface or follow this story with a very clear notice that this is a story. This is only a story. Had it not been a story, the laws of physics would be unimaginably different. And chances are, Mommy and Daddy would have flying cars by now, as well as possibly a few elf servants. Regarding the connection between teaching children to believe in Santa and teaching them to believe in some religion, I think it is fairly obvious that in both cases, children are being told to believe a set of comfortable lies. In the case of Santa, these lies reinforce cultural traditions that are relatively harmless when compared with the case of any religious dogma, but both reinforce toleration for irrational beliefs.
What should we teach children about Santa Claus? Well, I didn't know we should teach children about Santa Claus, but it's hard to answer such a general question, and it really does depend on the person. Because Some children could learn all about Santa, like myself, for example, and all the interesting stories people have created about him, but at the same time understand that he's just a myth, you know, he's not real. On the other hand, some children, and surprisingly some adults, will simply not accept the fact that Santa does not exist, as religion has demonstrated again and again over the years, forcing people to take on faith things which are blatantly false can have drastic consequences. Santa is taught to kids, though, it should be taught as something fun, like a character out of a storybook, which is, of course, what Santa Claus is. How is this similar to teaching religion, though? Well, more important than whether or not to teach Santa is whether or not to teach skepticism, because along with skepticism comes the realization that Santa is, in fact, not a reality. In this respect, it's identical to the teaching of religion, which, given skepticism and rationalism, would likewise be a mere fable. Now, some may call me Scrooge, but to those who do, I ask, why can't I give you a present without telling you it came from a fat white man in a big red suit who breaks into your house through your chimney every year?
What exactly can we teach children about Santa Claus? What are the facts? His jacket size? His mailing address? How fast his sleigh flies? I think the question presupposes that Santa Claus is not real. If he is real, of course we should teach children about him, just like we teach them about other real things, cats and dogs and gravity and evolution. Are you sure he's real? Do you have absolute certainty of his existence? Probably not, but you can still believe. Can anyone prove to you that he is not real? Probably not. So by that reasoning, you must accept his existence. See the problem? People make the same arguments about gods. They say you cannot be sure their god exists, but they believe anyhow. Or they say that you cannot prove their god does not exist, so they are okay, even required, to believe. But if that doesn't work with Santa, why would it work for gods? People teach their children all kinds of things. The question is whether they teach their children about Santa in the same way they teach them about Jesus, or in the same way they teach them about Hercules. I assume that many parents tell their children stories about Hercules or other Greek gods. I also assume that they do not tell them that Hercules is real. Instead, they say, here is a story about a mythical character. Christians, at least, tell their children about Jesus, but I assume they tell them that Jesus is real. Of course, I'm sure that ancient Greek parents told their children that Hercules was real, too. If a parent wants to tell a child about a fictional character, from Santa to the Easter Bunny to Hercules to Harry Potter, I have no objection to it. However, if a parent wants to tell a child about a fictional character as if the character is real, I have a big objection to it. I like to think that no parent would intentionally lie to his or her child. You have to wonder, then, why parents and our whole society go to such elaborate lengths to perpetrate the lie of Santa. After all, a pretty lie is still a lie. So why tell children anything about such a false figure? Why even have a false figure like that? And once we identify a religious character as fictional, whether Hercules, Vishnu, or Jesus God, why even continue to talk about him?
Santa Claus is a myth. Now, admittedly, outside of religion, it is one of the most accessible and enjoyable myths the world over. The Santa Claus archetype combines the celebration of the solstice with a mild moral lesson, and, of course, lots and lots of candy. I mean, let's face it, has the guy really ever left someone a piece of coal? Now, when I was a child, my parents made no secret that Santa Claus didn't actually exist. But that never bothered me. Thanks to Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, it was easy for me to comprehend stories and characters that were imaginary, and yet also meaningful. Santa Claus or King Friday the 13th, both were entertaining in the same way. Now, other people I meet have, quote, how I found out stories. Not me. I don't think that I'm missing out just because I didn't have to go through some kind of childhood trauma. I think the biggest crime is that learning about Santa Claus being make-believe is very similar to finding out that someone special has died, in a way. Put in that perspective, it just seems really damn cruel to do that to a child. If I have children of my own someday, I'll be sure to teach them about all the myths I've learned. That way, whether they're watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or the Ten Commandments, they can enjoy the stories for what they are and not have to deal with being lied to by their father.
One shouldn't encourage irrationalism. This can cause troubles for this person for the rest of his or her life and the people around. What I can encourage is encouraging a symbolic understanding of myths and rituals. This can be very enriching for one's life. But you have to understand that dealing with a set of symbols, symbolically or literally, is quite something else. There is no such thing as teaching religion. There is nothing to teach because it's not logical, so it can't be explained. It can only be brainwashed into someone. So the promotion of Santa Claus belief and religious belief is the same, but the Santa belief is promoted consciously and the religious belief like a meme, and the person is a slave to the virus.
Our third question is, what is your reaction to people who say that they'll pray for you? What are your thoughts about it?
I'll pray for you. What does that mean when someone says that to me? I often wondered about the efficacy of prayer when I was a Christian, but I have no doubt that it's worthless now. For the more ardent fundamentalist Christians, I'll pray for you means I'm not willing to talk to you anymore, but maybe God in his infinite patience can take the time to deal with you. Sometimes I wonder just exactly what they're praying for. Is it that I find the salvation of Christ and sit next to them in the church pew next Sunday morning? Or do some of them secretly pray that I'll be made an example of, and that God will zap me with lightning in front of all the other heathens, so that they break loose from the orgy and get thee hence to the nearest plot of holy ground? That's right. I'm looking at you, Pat Robertson. The more liberal Christians see prayer, I think, as more as a backup. I'll pray for you means I really want to keep talking to you, but I just can't seem to be making any headway on my own. So maybe I can convince my good buddy Jesus Christ to sit down, have a few beers with you, and maybe bring you around to our way of thinking. It's at least a more humble approach, but what do they really expect? Then there are the really sincere, they'd be so cute if it weren't so sad Christians. For them, I'll pray for you almost means I'm pleading with you. And it's hard to tell if they're actually even thinking about God at all, or are just so focused on getting me to think like them. These guys I really pity, because they've invested so much into convincing themselves that they've chosen the right path that it almost undermines their faith just to find someone who disagrees with them. Ultimately, of course, prayer is meaningless. The acceptance of an omniscient deity rules that out solidly. But I don't mind prayer. It's as little effort for me to tolerate you praying as it is you talking to your invisible friend, Harvey.
What is your reaction to people who say that they'll pray for you? What are your thoughts about it? Well, if they mean it symbolically, then that's okay. If they think it's actually going to make a difference, then that's weird. And dealing with these people in general would be quite bothersome. I don't think I'd feel offended, and I'm not sure if theists can offend me besides disgust me.
I find that there are two kinds of religionists. One is harmless, even well-intentioned. I see no reason to antagonize them unnecessarily and to confirm the stereotype of all atheists as negative and mean. Just smile and say no thanks. The other type is harmful, condescending, and sometimes downright hateful. When they say something about praying for me, I'm inclined to say things like, "Do you really think your God is going to change the laws of the universe and modify his divine plan for you, or even worse, for me?" Or, "If nothing happens, are you willing to give up your belief?" Or, While you do that, I'll be doing something useful. Or, the Hindus are praying for me too, so maybe Vishnu will answer. Or the good old standby, nothing fails like prayer. Or maybe my favorite, okay, you pray for me, and I'll think for you. In the end, ask them why their all-knowing God doesn't already know what they want, and why their all-powerful God hasn't already made it so. Prayer is just one place, and maybe the best place, to see the nonsense of religion.
What is your reaction to people who say that they'll pray for you? What are my thoughts about it? Oh, God. Now, I've heard before that you form an opinion of someone, even if it's just subliminal, in the first few seconds that you see or meet them. And if in those first few seconds, or any time at all, really, after that, they pray, my opinion is going to be lowered drastically. Okay, because, wow, what prayer essentially tells me is that these people have absolutely zero capacity for logic and for reasoning in general. That's what prayer tells me. Because a very simple deductive argument can show that prayer can't possibly have any effect. I was watching Bruce Almighty the other day, and he gets fed up and he lets everyone win the lottery when they pray to win the lottery. And what happens? You know, they all win and they all get $2 or something. It's just ridiculous, the people that pray. And they waste countless hours on it every year. Prayer is, I'll tell you this, prayer is the reason I consider myself to be not just an atheist, but an anti-theist. Because prayer can only have negative consequences and they're just simply unacceptable.
Surprisingly enough, and this could be age-related forgetfulness talking, after I revealed to others that I am an atheist, I did not receive any self-righteous declarations of prayer for my, you know, eternally damned soul. However, I did receive, and continue to receive, clear indications of pity. For instance, several months ago, a close family member who shall remain anonymous confided in me with an equally surprising burst of anger, resentment over letting another family member impose on my malleable mind a set of religious beliefs that significantly differ from those of the former angry person. The implication was clear. You are the unfortunate victim of someone's inaccurate interpretation of the Bible, and you cannot be held accountable for what you now believe, so please excuse me while I pity you to your face. Well, had I been told that I would receive prayer, my initial internal reaction would have been no different. It would have been, thank you, but no thank you. I am responsible for my own decisions, and if God exists, then He already knows all this and allowed it. So, don't waste your time praying for me. Instead, spend your time appreciating your life.
And our last question. If you were king, do you think you could get rid of religion? If so, how? And if not, why not? Would it be desirable to get rid of religion? Why or why not?
Religion is bad for humanity, for its future. There's no doubt about that. However, if I had the power to allow or prevent the continuation of one or more religions in a certain region of the world, I would choose to allow it. I would not encourage it, but I would also not proactively discourage it, even though I have a feeling that some of my decisions as Commander-in-Chief would inadvertently inhibit or even eliminate certain religious practices. Unless I were king over a country that continually trains, arms, and deploys terrorist organizations at the rate that most countries graduate high school seniors, I would try my best not to do what religions and some atheistic governments are famous for doing, which is to force acceptance of and adherence to a certain philosophical position. As king, I would want my ever-devoted prostrating subjects to have the freedom to believe whatever they choose. That said, I would not want my subjects to force their beliefs on one another. In a sense, this is impossible. Memes are vicious that way. However, It might be possible to give people freedom and control over their ideas, what James Madison called the property in rights, while at the same time promoting reason through education.
If you were king, well, if I was king, that'd be the day. Do you think you could get rid of religion? If so, how? And if not, why not? Would it be desirable? Why or why not? First of all, let me just say that I have no desire to be king, but if I were king, given that I'm king, well, I wouldn't mandate anything, first of all, but what I would do is stress the importance of rationality and reason in society. And I think people tend to listen to their leaders, perhaps most of the time a little too blindly, but what I would hope, anyway, that would come out of this is that people listening to me would be convinced that religion was essentially worthless. In fact, all faiths were worthless. Is it desirable to get rid of it? Of course. I mean, what could come out of that but more reason, more science, more efficiency, better technology? Religion is the number one detractor to science and technology progression throughout the ages, and what else could a king want for his people? That being said, I don't see religious fanatics putting up with a king against all religions for very long. I guess it's a bit ironic, because to that end, I'd be willing to put my money down that the religious fanatics themselves would be the ones responsible for cutting my reign as king just a little bit short.
If you were king, do you think you could get rid of religion? You can try to illegalize religious expression, but when someone has a religious belief, they will always try to spread it. That's the nature of the virus in the mind. But people should be able to think whatever they want, but I'm not sure if you could allow people brainwashing children and such. You, for instance, you could say that people should always mention when talking to kids that it's just what they believe and it's not necessarily the truth. I think in a libertarian society this would be a nice rule. Because from studies we've learned that children of an atheist and a theist generally comes out an atheist because he sees both sides of the story and nothing is presented as absolute truth. So with that such a rule, it could really help to abolish religion. However, when a religious parent hears such a rule, he wouldn't obey it, because the nature of the virus is to spread it. It's saying spread, spread, spread. This is good. You should do this. And anyone who says otherwise is evil. So, anytime there are still religious people around, it's going to be very hard to get rid of religion. Would it be desirable to get rid of religion? I think yes. My opinion is that religion is pure evil and nothing good comes out of it, because it's not based on reality. So its morality is not morality, it's just nonsense. It's only self-serving man behavior. But I wouldn't forcefully try to get rid of religion. I would try to get rid of coercion, of course, but religion is something that needs to fade away quite slowly, or else there will be quite a lot of violence.
Our team was Robert Dawson, David Eller, Edward Grieve, Niels van der Linden, and Zachary Moore. Thank you, everyone, for their great work. An archive of this feature is available on hellboundalley.com/voxpopuli. Our next episode will be the holiday edition, so don't miss it. This was the first episode of Vox Populi, the voices of atheism.